We begin the current daf of Zivam is daf Tzadi Tes. We begin on top of the Amud, where the Gemara continues the discussion from the previous daf and that of the previous Mishnah, where the Mishnah introduced the topic about when there's a doubt in the paternity or when it's not clear who this child's father or mother is. So the Gemara introduces a braiso which illustrates a different halachas that can crop up because of this doubt. Tarban Olin Abraiso. Yesh Chaylitz Le'imim Asafik. There can be a case where a person can give a du chalitza to his mother out of doubt. Not as that, although we learned in the beginning of the Masechta that one of the 15 women that are arayis and they're exempt from yibim chalitza and they even exempt their co-wives, but here where since it's going to be doubtful if she is a woman that needs his yibim chalitza or not because she might be his mother, so out of doubt, even though she might be his mother, he's going to have to do chalitza. Similarly, la'achosim esafik, that he's going to have to do chalitza to his sister out of doubt, and Lebita Misafik to his daughter out of doubt. So although these three women are really arayis and are exempt from Yim Chalitza, but since because of the doubt, that they're going to end up giving Chalitza to these women. So the Braisa says, Ketza, what's the conceptualization of these three cases? So the Mishnah starts off, the Braisa says, Imoi v'isha acheres, if it his mother and another woman, v'lehen shnei zachar, and they have two sons, meaning each one has a son. Then these same two women then have two sons in a cave where it's not clear who gave birth to who. As Rashi says the case, for example, if you have Rachel, that's the wife of Yaakov, who gives birth to Yosef. You have Chana, who is married to Reuben, a different man, who has Chetzrin from that union. Then both of them go ahead and have sons in the cave, and then their husbands, Yaakov and Reuben, die. So then the case continues, the Braisa says, Ubo b'no shalzu, then the son of one of them, meaning Yosef, the son of Rachel, he comes, v'no se'ime shalze, then he marries, which he's allowed to, Chana, who is the mother of Chetzrin, unrelated to them. Then you have Ubo shalzu, you have the son of the other one, which is Chetzrin, v'no se'ime shalze, and he marries the mother of the other one, meaning of Yosef, who that's Rachel. Umeisu, and then Yosef and Chetzrin both die, b'loi banim, without any children. So now, what we call the Tarubis, the other two brothers, I mean, each one had a brother, who were not sure who's their mother. Now, you have Rachel falling in front of the son of Chana, who's the brother of Chetzrin, and you have Chana falling in front of the son of Rachel, who that's the brother of Yosef. Now, the problem is, we don't know which one is her son, and which one is her Yevama. So therefore, she needs to have Chalitza from both of them. As the Braisa says, Zechayitz l'shtei. And so each one of these mixture sons, the ones who we're not sure who's their mother, has to do chalitza to both of them. Zechayitz l'shtei, and this one does chalitza to both of them. Again, we're not sure which one is the brother of the other one, that it's not his mother that he's allowed to do yim chalitza, so you have to do chalitza to either one. Nimtze kol echa ve'echad chalitz l'imim esafik. So it comes out that each one of these two unclear attributed children will end up doing by at least one of the two, is going to be his mother, but since we don't know, because she might not be his mother, it might actually be his Yavama, so therefore he has to do Chalitza Misafik on both, and comes out that he's giving his mother Chalitza because of the doubt. The second case, the Braisa says, La'chaysa Misafik Kesa. How do you have the second case of when he's going to have to do Chalitza to his sister out of doubt? So the Braisa says, and there's two versions of Rashi based on different girsos in this case, The Braisa says, Imai v'isha acheres, his mother and another woman, sheyodushte in the cave is b'machave. That again, they both were in a cave, and in other words, somewhere was dark, they couldn't tell which child was which, and they gave birth each one to a female. Ubo acheyen sheloi mo'ese'em. Now then their brothers, which were not from that same mother, so therefore they're only the brothers of these not cleared women, so therefore those brothers are only paternally related to them, and those sisters are their maternal sisters. So therefore, these two other brothers of these brothers that we're discussing are not related to those sisters. Now that's actually the girsa we have in our Gemara. But Rashi, in his first approach, has a different girsa, which we will explain, that says, v'amdu shnei achim min ha'av. That we're not talking about two people that, and it's their brothers. Rather, talking about one person, and he has two brothers that are paternally related to him, not maternally related, and therefore, v'nasum, whoever it is that we're talking about, either we're talking about two unrelated boys, or we're talking about two from that are paternally related to this one person. Either way, they went and married those two girls, who again they weren't related to. They're just related to the brothers of those girls. Umesu b'lei banim. Then those two men die without any children. So now chaylitz l'shteyin. So now these two boys have to chalitza to both of them. But nimtza chaylitz l'chaysim b'safik. It comes out that one of them is his sister, and he's doing chalitza to his sister out of doubt. Now Rashi, again, as we mentioned before, brings a girsa from a Tosefta that it's the girsa is v'amdushnei achim min av. That we're talking about one person who has these two girls that it's not clear which one's his sister, which one's not, and he also besides that has two paternal brothers from a different father. Now, so Rashi brings the case as follows: you have a woman that gave birth from a different man after his father had died, so she had married another man, and then she and another woman had given birth, and each one had a girl. Now, we don't know which one was the daughter of which mother. Now, and again, this is the case according to the first Girsa of Rashi brings down, is that now this person, this boy, there's just him, he had a mother who his father died, she married another man, now in the cave together with another woman, had a daughter. But we don't know which one's her daughter. Now this boy, besides that, had from his father, not from his mother, had two brothers. Those two brothers, who are unrelated to his maternal sister, went and married those two girls, meaning one brother married one and the other one married the other one. Now, they died without any children. They're falling in front of him for Yibum. Now, the problem is, one of them is Achisa Me'ima, is his maternal sister. Now, had he known which is which, that one would not have required Chalitza. But now that he doesn't know which is which, they both need to have Chalitza. So it comes out that he's doing Chalitza to his sister, Mesafik, out of doubt, because she might be the one that's not a sister. Now, Rashi brings another version, which is actually the Girsa that's brought in our Gemara, that Uvo Acheihen Shloimo Isaim. That their brothers, I mean, we're talking about two people, not one as in the first version, two people, that their brothers came and married their maternal sisters, which that's not a problem for those brothers that married them, because they were only the paternal brothers of these, not related to those girls, and married them. So the way Rashi describes the case is that Reuven's brother married one, and Chetzrin's brother, who we're adding another person here, married the other one. Reuven does chalitza to his brother's wife, because we're told that he only has one brother in this case, because it might be his sister, and so to Chetzrin. So that's Achaisim Esafik, he might be doing chalitza to his sister. Now Rashi says that he doesn't like this pshat, because maybe it's not his sister. And according to this version, it should have said, Zecholitz Lesafik Achaisai. This one does chalitza to what might doubtfully be his sister, and Chetzrin also does chalitza to someone that might be his sister. But the terminology brought in the Braisa of Achoisei Misafik, where that he's doing chalitza to his sister out of doubt, sounds like that he's definitely doing to his sister because of the doubt that he has, which makes more sense according to the first version, that there's one person with two brothers who marry both of them, and then he's going to chalitza to both of them, but one of them is most definitely his sister. Whereas the second version Rashi brings that there's two men, with each one has one brother who marries one, that yes, he has to do chalitza, and it might be his sister, but it might not be, so then it wouldn't say achaysa masafik, but rather safik achaysa. Now the Braisa moves on to the third case. Lebita masafik case, that how do you have the case where someone will be giving chalitza to his daughter out of doubt? So ishtai v'isha acher, so it's told me that his wife and another woman, where we're talking about there's a wife of Reuven and there's a wife of Kalev, sheyodushtein the kevis b'machve, that both their wives were, the power was off, they gave birth to two girls and no one knows which is which. Now it comes out that one of them is his daughter. Uvo achein. Now the two brothers of Reuven come, the nesom, and then they go ahead and marry these two girls, who they're allowed to marry even their nieces if one of them is his daughter. And now those two brothers of Reuven die without any children. So the Braisa says, Zecholitz lebitoi misafik. So it comes out that Reuven's going to be doing chalitza to his daughter out of doubt, because both of them need chalitza. Now, had he recognized which one was his daughter, obviously she'd be exempted and they wouldn't do chalitza too. Now, the same thing applies that if the two brothers of Kalev go ahead and marry these two girls, that he also goes ahead and does chalitza out of doubt because of the same idea that one of them might not be his daughter, so he has to do chalitza, and we don't know which is which, so he does chalitza to both and comes out that one of them at least is his daughter and that he's doing chalitza to her out of doubt. Now, Rashi brings again, like he brought in the previous case from his teachers, that the case was different, that we're talking about that the brother of Reuven married one, and the brother of Kalev married a different one, and Reuven does chalitza to his brother's wife, even though that might be the one that's his daughter. And so to by Kalev, by again, Rashi has the same problem he has before, that that's not doing chalitza lebitoy misafik, but rather that's doing chalitza lesafik bitoy. But you're not doing definitely to your daughter out of doubt. You're doing to the one that might be your daughter, and therefore Rashi doesn't like that interpretation. Related to this discussion, the Gemara brings the Tanya Linda Braisa. Rameh would say, you could have an ish v'ish, a man and a woman, pa'amim shemelidin chamish umas, that sometimes they're going to give birth to five distinct different categories of people. Ketzad, how so? The following case, Yisrael shalokach eved v'shifcha menashok. You have a Jew that purchases a slave and a maid and a slave woman from the market. And when he bought them, they already had two sons. V'nisgar echad mehem. Now, the sons are not considered slaves because since he purchased them from an idol worshiper, the idol worshiper doesn't have a kinyan in them to make them considered as avadim, but rather they have the halacha of akum of non-Jews. So now one of the sons goes out and he converts. Nimtza echad ger v'echad oikachavim. So it comes out now these parents, these slaves, have one child that's a non-Jew, and one of them that's a convert, now, as we said before, because the children that they had are not avodim, as the Gemara said on Daf Mem Vav Med Aleph, where it says mehem tiknu, that you could purchase slaves from non-Jews, but they cannot purchase from you, and neither can they purchase one from the other. Their acquisitions of their own people as slaves is not considered slaves. So one of them is a non-Jew, as he was beforehand, and one of them now converted, so they have one child a ger, one child a non-Jew. The case continues. Hitfilin l'shem abdus. Now, if let's say the Jewish master goes and now he immerses the parents for the intention of making them into avadim, meaning they're not considered, as we said before, avadim until he actually immerses them and makes them in the halachic criterion of an eved, which has certain mitzvahs they have to keep. Before he does that, they're non-Jews. And then v'niskakuz elazeh, and then they're together, the two slaves, harekan ger v'ev kachavim v'eved. Comes out that the first child they had who never converted is still a non-Jew. The other son who converted is a ger. Their new son is now an eved because whenever you have a maidservant, her children are going to be considered avadim. Case continues. Shechra es ha-shifcha. If let's say then he frees the maidservant, which makes her like a regular Yisraelis, a Jewish woman, uvola eved, now her husband, whatever this other man who's the slave, goes and cohabits with her, so the child's going to be a mamzer. So harikan ger v'avikachavim v'eved amamzer. Now you have four already. You have a ger that's a child, you have a non-Jew that's a child, you have an eved that's a child, and now that since she's a Jew and an eved cohabited with her, eved habo abas yisrael, the child's going to be a mamzer. And then the case goes, shecher shneihem v'sin zalzef. Let's say he frees both, the woman and the man, and then they marry each other. Harikan ger v'avikachavim v'eved umamzer. And finally, now that they're both Jewish, v'yisrael, a regular full-fledged Jew that's born from that birth. So the Gemara says, what are we teaching in this brisa besides the uniqueness of this case? So the Gemara says, Eved kachav ve'eved abo abas Yisrael, Vlad Mamz is teaching us the halacha that if a non-Jew or an eved, like which was this case, that cohabits with a Jewish woman, which was at the case after she was meshucher, that Havlad Mamz, the child, is going to be considered an illegitimate child, and therefore you're going to have all these five cases. Now related to this, the Gemara brings Tarban Linda brisa, Yesh moiches aviv. There could be a case where someone sells his father lahagvis imay ksubasa to collect the ksuba for his mother. Ketzad, how is this? Yisrael lokach eved v'shivcha menashok. You could have it similar to the previous brisa that we brought, where a Jew purchases a male and a female servant from the market. V'lahem ben, and they had a son, which again, as we said before, he didn't acquire the son. He just purchased the parents. Now v'shivcha es ha-shivcha, then this Jewish owner went and freed the maidservant, Vanessa, and he married her because she's a regular full-fledged Jewess. and he liked her so much, he went and he wrote all his properties away to her son, and then he died. Now, the mother is claiming her ksuba from the properties of her husband. Now, who owns the properties? Her son. So Nimtza comes out that Zeh, this son, Meichres Aviv, sells his father, who is a slave, Lahagvis Lima Ksubasa, to collect for his mother her ksuba, because he wants to go ahead and have money to pay up the ksuba of his mother by selling his father, who is his slave. So the Gemara says, "My Kamashma, what are we teaching in this uniqueness of this case?" So the Gemara says, "Kula Reb Meir here." It's coming to say that this second brisa that we're quoting actually is the seifa, is a continuation of the previous brisa that we quoted. That was, as we started off that brisa, that was Reb Meir who said this. It was said, "Ha'yir Reb Meir Omer." Now, moreover, that it's saying va'avdim metatli. It's saying that what we're teaching in this brisa, the second one, is that slaves have halacha as movable property. Now that's why Reb Meir is saying in the second brisa that an eved, a slave, which is what this father is indebted. He's meshubed. He's part of the collateral towards the ksuba that this son is selling to pay up for his mother's ksuba, and that's because Reb Meir holds a metaltli mishtab l'ksubasa, l'ksuba, that metaltli, movable property, are still could be claimed for indebted to the ksuba, as is brought in Masechta Ksubas and not pay him a base. Where it's taught over there that if someone leaves payrus that's telushim karka, which are movable types of produce that are not connected to the ground anymore, that Remeyah holds is mishtablik subas, and that's what we're teaching in this brisa, that's Remeyah l'shitasai, that although an evid is a movable object, he's not part of the ground, but still it's going to be mishubit to his mother's ksuba because he holds that metatle are mishtablik subas. Or if you want, you could say that Hakamash wanted to know what the Bryce is teaching is not necessarily that it's a continuation of Remeir Lashitasa, but rather Avdi Kimakarka Dami, that slaves have halacha like karka, although he's movable, but we find other place in halacha that he has the same status as ground itself, and that according to everybody is Meshub L'Ksubas, and that's what the Bryce is teaching, that his father could be Meshub to his mother's Ksuba, because although he's an Eved and he's movable, but in halacha he has the halacha as karka. The Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, again continuing the theme of the previous Mishnah, discussing when it's not clear of who is the mother of this child. So the Mishnah says, "So isha shenisar vlad bevlad kalasa." If there's a woman that her child got mixed up with the child of her daughter-in-law, they both gave birth and they're in the same house and they get confused, they're wearing the same outfit, no one knows whose child is who. So the Mishnah says, "Higdilu hataruvis v'nasu nashem meso." That's the case it's talking about, where this mixture, they're both Jewish, it's okay, but they get older, they marry women, and then they die without any children. So the Mishnah says, "Bnei hakala chultzim lemeyamin." The sons, the other sons of the daughter-in-law, have to do chalitza, but they can't do yibum, because shu safik eishes achiv, that on the one hand, that you have to do either yibum or chalitza, because maybe it's their brother's wife. But you can't do yibum because safik eishes achiv, and maybe it's really their father's brother's wife, because we weren't sure was it the mother-in-law's or the daughter-in-law's child. So if it's their father's brother's wife, that is always forbidden for them to baal leha. And therefore you have to chalitza out of that. But b'nei hazikena, the sons of the mother-in-law, they could be either oichaltzin le'miyabim. They could either do chalitza or yibim. And the reason is because shesafik eishesachav. There's a doubt that maybe it's their brother's wife, which that's permitted because he died without any children. That's a het of yibum. And even if it's not their brother's wife, but ve'eshes ben achiv, maybe it's their brother's son's wife, which again is their niece, which is permitted anyway, because we're saying we're not sure if it's ben hakalo or ben hazakena, but either way, the ben hazakena could go ahead and do yibum or chalitza. Now, the Mishnah says, if let's say it's the other way around, let's say Mesu Haksherim, let's say one of the other sons die, not those which we call Taruves, the ones of the mother-in-law or the ones of the daughter-in-law. So then HaTaruves, so let's say regarding the mixture, let's say they're the only brothers left. So Lebnei HaZakena, for the mother-in-law's other sons, they have to either do Chaltzim Lemeyamin. They could either do Chalitza Benat Yibam. And the reason is, as we said before, that it's only doubtful his brother's wife, but it might actually be that he was the daughter-in-law's son, and therefore this is his father's brother's wife, which that's always forbidden. Now, for the the wife of the son of one of the definite ones, then echad, then one of the people from the mixture, he'll be chaylitz. He'll first do chalitza, and then the other one from the mixture will do yibam, and that's maman of shachid, the way you look at it, because if that's his yavama, then good. And if it's his brother's son's wife, which is his niece, then that's also okay, because the first one already did chalitza, which one obviously was his yavam, was his, the yavam. And then it's permitted him either way, as we said before, this is the case in the reverse. A different type of a case, the Mishnah says, kehanes shenisar v'lod b'vlat shevchasa. If a woman that's a kehanis, that married to a kohen, that her child got mixed up with the child of her maidservant. So the Mishnah says, Hare elo oichlim b'truma. They're allowed to eat truma, both of these boys, because one's a kohen and one is an evid kohen, who's also allowed to eat truma. And v'cholkin chelik echad begarin, and they have one portion that they split, that they shear from the granary where they go ahead and collect the truma, which Gemara will explain what exactly does that mean. We continue on to Tamid Beis. They're not allowed to be metama to mason because they might be, each one might be a kain. And ve'enam nasim nashim, they're not allowed to marry women, bein kasheris, whether it's a kashera, a woman that's valid for kahuna because he might be an eved who's forbidden in that. And bein besulis, and they can't marry either a woman like a maidservant because he might be a kain. So Mishnah says, igdila hatarubis, if this mixture, meaning this not clear who's the kohen's daughter, the kohen's child, and who's the maidservant's child, when they get older, v'shichur zeazeh, so what they do is, obviously, to simplify things, they free each other, because either one's the owner and the one's the slave, or the one's the owner and the other one's the slave, so they free each other, so they're both Jewish. So nasim nashim ru'is l'kuna, so what they have to do is they have to marry women that are fit for kahuna, but that's also fit for regular Yisrael, which is what the Eved Meshurcher becomes. In other words, they can't marry a Gush or a Chalutza because he might be a Kayin. And Ve'in Metamah L'Mason, they still cannot be Metamah to Mason because he might be the Kayin. But Ve'im Nitmu, if they were Metameh, so then in the Seif Kemar Harbam, they don't get lashes like a Kayin would because each one could say, I'm not really a Kayin. Now, but ve'ein an oichle mitruma, they're not allowed to eat from truma because a zar, a non-kohen, which if this one of these might be Yisroel, who's the Eved Meshurcher, is not allowed to eat truma. But ve'emachu, if they do eat, so though they violated possibly an iser, but ein an mishal mekar mechemish, min monetary law, they don't pay the principal and the fifth, which is what a non-kohen has to do, because each one could say, I'm a kohen, and they don't have to pay the penalty. Ve'ein an chalken al garen, they don't split. They don't go ahead and get their portion of truma by the threshing house. And the reason is because each one might be an Eved Meshurcher who is a Yisrael, who doesn't have any rights to go ahead and get truma. U'maychu nesa truma. Now, however, they sell their own truma. In other words, when they have produce that they're separating truma, they don't have to give it to a kohen, because each one could say to the kohen that come and want to collect truma to say, what do you mean? Bring proof that I'm not a kohen and you take it. Now, however, as Rashi points out, obviously he's not allowed to eat it because he might be a non-kohen. But rather what he does is that he sells it to a kohen, v'adam shalahen, but the money goes to them. Mishnah continues, v'einu chalkin b'kadshi ha-mikdash, that in the first version of Rashi, he says that means to say that they don't get what's split from kadshim, in other words, the hides of kadshim, which is a monetary law, that they don't get. Because for them, it's ha-mitzim echav al-rai, they have to prove that they are kahana. And ve'ein nisin lehem kachim, we don't give them kachim to be makriv in the Beis HaMikdash. But ve'ein mitzin shalehem yodeim, we don't, their kachim that they're coming to bring, that we don't take away from them. In other words, as the first version of Rashi interprets, so let's say they have to bring a carbon to the Beis HaMikdash. They're liable for a chatos or an asham or an oilam. So we don't force them to give it to the anshei mishmer, which is what usually is the due process. You give it to the kohanim that have that day's work. And then the avodah and the hides go to the anshei mishmer, that we don't do. Because each one could say, no, I'm a kohen. And as we learn the braisa in Masechtas Baba Kama, that we learn that a kohen could come on any day and any time that he wants to, even if it's not his own mishmer, and he could do the avodah, as the pasuk says, uvo b'cholavis nafshe b'sheris. Now, and how do we know that the avodah and the hide goes to them? As it says, v'ishas kadesh lo yiyu. Now, regarding this mixture, meaning these two men, who might be an Eved that was freed, which makes him a non-Kohen in Yisrael, or might be a Kohen, since each one of them that claim that they're a Kohen, so Bezin can't take out from them by force to give it to the Anshei Mishmer. Rather, what they do is they have their karbanas brought, and then they get the meat and the hide given back to them, and then they give it to whoever they want to. Or they make a shliach, whichever kohen they want to bring their karban, or they hold on to it to whatever they want, and they give it to it, whichever mishmer they want to. That's one version, Rashi. Then Rashi brings another version, which he holds as primary, that going back to halachas in the Mishnah, he interprets ve'ein noslim kadshim. This that we don't give this these two men from the Tarubis kadshim doesn't mean, like we said before, the hides of the kadshim. Rather means that when there's a bechayr, a firstborn that are one of the matnas kahuna, or charamim, when a man says this should be cherim, it goes cherim kam, it goes to the kanim. That those gifts do not go to these men, although that's a monetary law. And the imaytzin neshalehem miyadum, when it says we don't take out from them which is them, is talking about where he says I'm a kayin, and therefore my firstborn I get to hold on to. Similarly, when he makes something cherim, he says I get to hold on to it, as it says in Mishnah Masechtas Erechin, that kahanim there when their cherim is theirs, they don't have to give it to other kahanim. Now then, skipping a halacha in our Mishnah, then the Mishnah says that, so what does he do with his bechor if he gets to hold on to it? That's what the Mishnah will shortly quote, yir ad sheyistayv, so then he lets it graze until it develops a blemish, but he can't bring it as a carbon, as a tam, meaning unblemished, because the reason is because then the kohen who's bringing it will not be able to eat its meat, because the one who's bringing it says he wants to hold on to it, but he's not going to be able to eat it either, because he might be a non-kohen. Now, Rashi says the reason why he holds the second interpretation as primary is because the first one is difficult, as the Gemara says above Bakama Daf Kof Yud, that where a person cannot do the Avodah himself, he can't make a Shliach either. And therefore, here where we're saying he can't do it because he might not be a Kain, so it's not feasible to say that he can go ahead and decide who he wants to do the Avodah, and therefore must be talking about not as Karbanas when he brings a Chatas and Asham, but rather Imutin Shalem Yadayim means, as it's all these three halachas are one halacha discussing a bechayr and cherim, which that's not regarding a carbon, it's regarding one of the matnas kuna. Now the Mishnah continues and says, upiturim in hazuraya. Now, although generally that when someone slaughters even a regular piece of a regular animal as chulin, nothing to do with the Beis HaMikdash, he has to give certain matnas kuna to the kanim. And that we're saying that this person, one of the two individuals that is doubtful kain, doubtful Yisrael, he's exempt min hazraya from the foreleg of min lachayim, from the jaws of min akeva, from the abomasam. In other words, the three parts that have to be given to the kohen. Because again, he could claim that I'm a kohen. And if you want to say that I'm not, that I'm the every kohen, hamaytzemech olrayim, bring proof that I'm not. Ubechayray, and as we had mentioned this before, regarding his firstborn animal, which generally has to be given to the kohanim as a gift, yeroya ad sheyistayv. So he lets it graze until it develops a blemish. Now, as Rashi says, this is even told about in the times of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, the reason is because they can't force him to give it to the Kehanim to bring it as a carbon, which is what's done for the Matnas Kuna of Bechor, and then the flesh is eaten, because what's going on over here is that they can't give it to a Kohen to bring it as a carbon, which is Bechor Tam, and then they should get the meat back. And the reason is because the Bechor Tam that's unblemished, the meat is only eaten by Kehanim, as it says in the Pasuk, Uvisarm Yilcho Kechazeh Atenufa, which is explained as such in Masechtas Bechoros. So therefore what we say is, for him to be able to hold on to his meat, because if, since it's a tam, and the only one that can do the Avodah are the Kehanim, but then they get to keep the meat, is that let it graze until it develops a blemish. Then they could slaughter it even out of the Beis HaMikdash, and then they could eat it. And the reason is because a bechor that's a baal mum, there's no prohibition of zaris of a non-kohen eating it. The only problem would be that it's theft from the kahanim, who they get to keep the bechor, whether it's tam or baal mum. But here there's not going to be a problem of theft, as we said before, because the moitzmech olarai, he might actually be a kohen, and therefore, regarding monetary law, they say we get to hold on to it. But regarding prohibitory law, there, they can't say out of doubt, because that's between them and God, and therefore that they wouldn't be able to get involved with, as we said regarding other halachas. But once it develops a blemish, it's only monetary law, and therefore they could hold on to it. And the Mishnah concludes, we impose upon these two individuals the stringencies of Kahanim and the stringencies of Yisrael, of non-Kahanim, which the Gemara will explain exactly what that means, since we already went through some of those halachas. Now the Mishnah said regarding the second version of the first case of the Mishnah, where we had this mother-in-law and daughter-in-law that their children got mixed up. So we said first the case of when the Taruvis die, what did the Bnei Azikainim and the Bnei Akala do? Then we said the other way, Mesach Sheirim V'chulu, that when the valid ones die, then what do the Taruvis do to their Suffolk Eishes Achav? So that the Gemara asked on the terminology, Elahanach Mishum De'eruva Luhu Havlu B'sulim? What do you mean, these other sons, because it just happened to be at the time of birth that it's not clear whose child they are, they're considered invalid ones to call the definite ones Ksherim? So Rav Papa says, you're right, Ema say, Umesa Havadoin. Now what it means to say is that when the definite ones die, then what do the Taruvis do? As the Gemara continues quoting from the Mishnah, where it says, so what the Taruvis do, meaning these two that we're not clear whose child they are. So Lebanei HaKala, to the sons, if one of the sons of the daughter-in-law die, so Echad Chaylitz, one of the Taruvis will do Chalitza, v'chulu, and then the other one will do Yibum. Now that the Gemara explains, Dafka Michlitz v'had Yibum, it has to be in that order. The first one of the Taruvis does Chalitza, and then the other one does Yibum. And as we said, the second one either way is not going to be a problem, because either it's Eishes Achav, or it's his niece, which is also not a problem. Avu Yivumi Bereshaloi. But you can't do it the other way around, having Yibum first. The reason is because maybe it's not Eishes Achav. Really, it's his brother's. It's his brother's son's wife. Where the Kapaga Yivam Lashok. Where then, if he's going to be marrying her, meaning doing Yibum first, which really the other one is the Eishes Achav. And therefore, he's going to be encountering Yivam Lashok, which is negative prohibition. And therefore, first let the other one do Chalitza, and then Meman Lashok, the second one, will be okay and is doing Yibam. Then the Mishnah moved on to another case that said, Kehana Shenes Arav V'chulu, regarding a woman that's from married to a Kayan, and that her child got mixed up with the child of her maidservant. So one of the halachas we said, because of the doubt, is that they get Chilik Echad Begarin. They get one portion of the granary. So the Gemara says, Chelik Echad Pshita, of course. Meaning the servant, although he could eat Truma, doesn't get his own portion at the granary. If a Kohen has 1,000 slaves, they don't all get a portion. Is that Kohen gets, and then his slave eats too. So of course, where they're mixed up, and one is the master, and one is the slave, of course they get one portion. So the Gemara says, no, Ema, what you should say is, Chelik Ke Echad, meaning that they get their portion as one, meaning only if both of them come to the granary do we give it to them. But if each one came on their own, we wouldn't give it to them. And the reason is, as the Gemara will shortly explain, because this Tana holds that we do not give Truma to the Eved at the granary only if his master is with him. And the reason is because maybe they see this, he could look like a respectable person, this Eved. He might almost look like a tzaddik. And then they're going to be miyachasim and saying, wait a second, he must be a very respected lineage. He must be a true kohen because we saw he was getting truma by the granary. And that's a problem because he's really an Eved, which obviously does not have the same yichus as a kohen. So therefore, it's only if they come together. Now, that the Gemara says, it's not command Omar. Our Mishnah was teaching like the one who says, Ein chalkin truma le'eved ilm kin rabba imar, that we don't apportion truma to a slave by the Gairin, only if his master is with him. The Tanakh like learned the Braisa, that it's actually Machlekes. Ein chalkin truma le'eved ilm kin rabba imar, the Rebbe Yehuda holds, which that's obviously what we're saying our Mishnah goes like, that you do not apportion truma to a slave unless his master is with him, which, like we said, is chelik ke'echad. Rebbe Yehuda, he says, no, yachal, you could. And the reason is Sheyaymer, and that's going on because it's the same type of a case as our Mishnah, where he's a Suffolk Kayin, Suffolk Eved. But he could say, look, Im Kayin Nani, if I'm a Kayin, well, Tenuli Bishvalatmin, they give it to me because of myself. A Kayin is allowed to go to the Garin and get. And Vim Eved Kayin Nani, and even if I'm the slave of a Kayin, well, Tenuli Bishval Rabbi, give it to me because I'm my master, who my master gets Truma, and I could eat his Truma. Now, so the Gemara explains the reasoning of the Machlekes. And that is, Bim Kaimesh Rabbi Yehuda, in the locale of Rabbi Yehuda, where he lived, Hayumailan Mitruma Layuchsin, people would attribute that if they see someone getting apportioned Truma at the Beis HaGoyim, again, not eating, because the Eved Kohen could eat, but rather that they're giving him his portion, then they assume that must be that he has Yichus, he's a true full-fledged Kohen, and therefore they would not be Chaylik Truma for Avodim by the Beis HaGoyim, because then you might come to enter that problem of that people will be Milam from the apportioning of Truma to Yuchsin. And he might be in Evan, therefore we don't let Avodim come. But in the place of Rabbi Yasi, Lo Hayyamalam, Truma Yuchsin, he says no problem for an Eved Kohen to go, because people did not assume, if they saw someone getting truma at the Beis HaKaren, that he must have yichus, and therefore you're not going to encounter that problem. So the Gemara says that, related to this, Tanya Lodin Abraya said that Amar Abelazar Tzadik, he says, Miyama Eloha Adati. I never went and said testimony regarding someone's yichus. Ela Edus Echad, rather one time I said testimony, where because he saw someone, that's what he was saying over, who got truma by the Beis HaKaren, and you know what? Because of that happened, v'helu eved l'kun al pi, and they ended up. This person turns out was really an eved. Who all I said was that he got truma by the Beis HaKaren, and because of that, they assumed that he has yichus of a kohen, and they made him the status of a kohen based on my testimony. So the Gemara asks, "Helu salkataytuch? Does this story really make sense? That they went and gave him the status of a yichus of kohuna, which has many halachic ramifications? But hashda behem d'shal tzaddikim. If we find, but even the animals of righteous people." Today, HaKadosh Baruch Hu may be takal al yod. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not bring a stumbling block through the animals, as we know the famous story with the donkey of Pinchas ben Yair, which is mentioned other times in Shas, that the animal didn't eat untithe produce. So tzaddikim atzim lekalshkin doesn't make sense that the righteous themselves, that a takala, a stumbling block, will not happen through their actions. So how could it be that he said a testimony that caused this machshel, this michshel of making an evident to a kain? So Elaim Rav the Gemara says, what he said was big shula halas eved l'kun al pi, that they attempted to make an eved into kuna based on my testimony, but it never ended up happening, and therefore takala never happened. But the Gemara explains that the reason for this mix-up was because Chaza, Blazer Tzadik, saw this person, who turns out was really an eved, getting truma from the Beis HaGoyrin ba'asri d'Rabbi Yosi. That's where he was at that time, where they weren't mala from truma l'yuchsin, and therefore they were mechalik la'avadim, and that's what he saw. But va'azlo va'asid va'asid Rabbi Yehuda, he went and said over this story in a different location, that of Rabbi Yehuda, who when they hear someone gets truma l'beis HaGoyrin, they're ma'al l'yuchsin, and that's why it happened, that it almost turned out that an eved was ma'al l'kuna based on his testimony. Now, related to this discussion of who gets apportioned by the beis HaGoyrin, the Gemara says, Tarmon Linda Braisa. Asara ein chok lehem truma beis HaGoyrin. There are actually 10 types of people who the Gemara will explain all the reasonings of all of them that don't get truma apportioned to them at the granary. Ve'elohen, and these are them. Cheresh shayt v'katan. You have a deaf, mute, a deranged person, and a minor. You have tumtum v'adregin. His tumtum is someone that his it's not clear if he's male or female because that area is covered over with a thin layer of skin. And a dragon is someone that has actually both male and female attributes. For Edra Isha and a slave and a woman, meaning the wife of a kohen. V'ha'aril and someone that's uncircumcised, meaning even someone that he cannot do circumcision because his brothers died, and therefore there's a chazaka that he's going to die too, but still he's uncircumcised. V'ha'tame and someone that's ritually impure. V'naisi Isha she'ena genisle and someone that marries a woman that's not fit for him, meaning that's a psul for kahuna. Although all these 10 people can eat truma, but however, they don't apportion it to them by the basic runners. However, but for all these people, we do send the truma to them, to their house, and there they could eat. Now, Rashi points out an oral that obviously is not allowed to eat truma, but meaning they give it to him and that he could feed it to his wives and to his slaves. Except actually for someone that's tame or has married someone that's possible for him, which Gemara will explain the reasoning for them. Those people, they don't send the truma to their house. Now, so the Gemara explains all the 10. Bishlam echeshe v'kadim. We understand why we don't apportion to the deaf, mute, the deranged person, and the minor by the Beis HaGoyrin. Is because lav b'nei deinin. These are people that are in halacha not considered that they have their knowledge, their understanding intact. And therefore, it's degrading for the holy food of truma to be apportioned to these types of people in front of everybody by the Beis HaGoyrin. We'll send it to them, but they don't get to line up by the Beis HaGoyrin and get it. Similarly, tumtum adregin, this nami regarding these two types of unique types of individuals, as we continue to talk of kof men alf, that very bifnei atzmim, it's because they're unique in their physiology, in their anatomy, and therefore it would be degrading for kachim, for holy things like truma, to be apportioned for them, but they do get to eat the truma. Evan nami, also a slave, as we said before, demo asid lasukim et truma liyuchsim, because they might come to elevate the status of this person from the truma that he's getting to yichus, which is not really the case. There's really an evid. Arul v'tamei, regarding someone that's uncircumcised or that's tamei, is mashum d'me'isi, because in halacha we view an uncircumcised person or someone that's tamei as repulsive, and therefore, again, it's not fit to apportion to them b'beis HaGoyrin. And Nesi Isha, and again, this law, Mishum Kanasa, someone that's married to a woman that he's also to be married to, a Malikan Gadol, other types of women. So that's a penalty that we penalize that, okay, because of that, you don't get your Chelik Beis Agranas. Eli Isha, my time Eloi. But what's the reason why a wife of a kohen, why could she not go? It's the household thing. She goes shopping. She's going to the basic ones. Why can't she not get the truma? So the Gemara says, "Pligi barapapa ravun the bereid of Yeshua." There's two different interpretations given for this halacha. Chara memeshum grusha. One says the reason is because maybe at one point her husband will divorce her, and that makes her into a non-kohen, non-kohenis, because it's only as long as she's married to her husband. Now, the problem is that people might not know that she's not married anymore, and they'll still give her because she's been coming for years and years collecting the truma. She also is going to continue going even after she's divorced, but that's not halachically valid anymore because she's not married to him anymore, and therefore we never give it to her. Another one says, we don't want women there because at the granary there might be just one man working there, and the woman will be there secluded with him, which is a halachic violation. Therefore, we never send a woman there. So the Gemara says, "My benai, what's halachic difference between these two interpretations?" Either there could be a difference. Beidari demikav lamasa. If you have a threshing house, a granary that's close to the city, where there's no concern about the case of grusha, because since it's close to the city, everybody hears who got divorced, and therefore they're not going to continue giving her. But it's still talking about a granary that there's not many men there, and therefore there could still be a yichud types of a problem of them being secluded. Or inam, or else you could say demerachik, that it's actually far from town, so therefore you would have the concern of grusha, because they wouldn't hear necessarily the news that she was divorced. But v'shchicha ba'inshi, that could be told about that there's many men over there, and therefore there wouldn't be any yichud shayla, and therefore that would be the halachic difference between these two interpretations. Why is it that we don't give Eshes Kayin her portion by the Beis Agranas, either because of what can eventually be when she's a grusha, or because of the halachic problem of yichud, of her being secluded with a man, the Beis Agranas?